This is Real in the Field Goals. It is Wednesday, September 2nd, 2015. We're finally there in September, which means that the first game of real game of NFL football is just around the corner. And you're listening to Real in the Field Goals, which is presented, as always, by the Ballard Agency in Kirkland, Washington. The Ballard Agency is an insurance company, family-owned and operated for over 50 years. They keep it in the family, and they also specialize in family businesses and anyone that's sort of got some sort of business going on in the Pacific Northwest. So if you call them at 425-454-3510 and tell them that Field Goals sent you, that would be great. And trying to think, you know, one of the keys to ads, especially local ads, is some sort of jingle. Danny, we should come up with a jingle.
We should, actually. Yes, that'd be good. That's not really my area of expertise, though.
Yeah, there's something there with the phone numbers, usually. It's like, yeah, I know that there's, if I tried to think, I could think of some local business phone numbers in Washington. 5-800-EMPIRE. Like the Empire.
God, yeah.
So that's 425-454-3510. It could be 4254. Oh no, that's just stealing. Just stealing Empire's jingle. Anyway, we'll try and think of that next time. But Ballard Agency, go to ballardagency.com, call them at 425-454-3510 and tell them that Field Goals sent you. Any insurance needs, they'll take care of you. All right, let's get into it. As I said, as we record this, it's Wednesday, September 2nd, and on Thursday, September 3rd, they'll play the Oakland Raiders in the preseason finale, get their last look at the guys that they have to work on their 53-man roster. We've got Curtis Crabtree from KJR and Pro Football Talk coming on the show in just a bit. We talked to him, and we'll talk about everything that's going on with the roster, the Cam Chancellor situation, and a little bit of tomorrow's game. So stay tuned for that. Me and Danny have a little conversation now. Danny, one other piece of news this week was that the Seahawks traded Kevin Norwood to the Carolina Panthers for an undisclosed 2017 draft pick. Even if it's a seventh round pick, Kevin Norwood is, you know, no offense, nothing. It just seems so. I know that the Panthers liked Norwood and that they, you know, that they need a receiver, but even to get anything at all for a player that gets cut in the first round of cuts, it's kind of remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, like, the way that worked out is I think the Panthers liked him coming out of the draft. I'd heard that they would have drafted him if the Seahawks hadn't grabbed him. So I think, you know, that's probably just – it's a way for them to jump up in the claim, the waiver claim, you know, a wire or whatever order. And, you know, get a guy that they'd liked coming out of the draft. I think he hasn't really shown much in terms of a dynamic ability as a receiver. He's more of like a possession guy, good hands. You know, he's a big body. So I think that's kind of the thing. And he just didn't really stand out in the preseason or in training camp for the Seahawks. And, you know, they got guys like Kevin Smith and Kaysen Williams, BJ Daniels, Ricardo Lockett, who are definitely showing more in terms of their versatility and I guess just ability as a receiver. So yeah, getting anything at this point for him is a bonus. Obviously, I think people are kind of bummed out because it's a conditional 2017 seventh round pick, which is like literally about the lowest you could get for anything. But I mean, again, it's better than just cutting him. So yeah, it's just stocking up. You know, you get one extra, you know, late seventh round pick is just like having a head or like a first step on the undrafted free agency. So, I mean, it's a good thing. It's not, you know, it's not valuable, but it's something there. And so, you know, how the Seahawks, the way that they mine the, you know, late round undrafted like guys, I think, you know, down the line, it could be a good thing.
Yeah, they seem to know what they're doing with those picks that were, you know, I think any time you're successful in sports, you know, we've seen a lot in the NFL is that you find a way to maximize the value out of things that other people are taking advantage of or taking for granted. So, you know, it's the same way, you know, John Schneider doesn't act that much differently than Jerry Jones did in the early 90s when he won three Super Bowls with the Cowboys. I think there's similarities to be made there, and they're just they're just taking advantage of everything that no one else is taking advantage of. And we've seen seventh round picks turn into J.R. Sweezy, you know, starting guard for the Seahawks. So definitely it's not nothing. And, you know, I like Norwood. I really want him to succeed. You know, sometimes when guys come in, you want to pick a couple guys that might be, you know, a fourth round pick, not a super long shot, but you just want to have someone under your wing and say, I believe in this guy. And that was a guy for me, definitely Norwood. And it just didn't work out, and he didn't have a good preseason either. So let's talk a little bit about this exciting 16-15 win over the Chargers on Saturday. 60-yard field goal from Steven Hauschka.
Which I was, overly excited about. But yeah,
it felt like a regular season win just because it was so monumental what actually happened to win it. Especially there was so much drama with the missed 58-yarder, and then it's like then he comes in. It was like the 58-yarder was like he kicked that as hard as he possibly could.
Yeah,
like that was like as far as it could possibly reach, and it was 57 yards. So then there was no way that he was going to make a 60-yarder, and then he kicked it 61 yards. So,
and I guess he had like the wind in his face, so he thought there was no way he was going to get it.
Yeah.
No, it was kind of funny because the whole game, part of the game, they were like foreshadowing it. Talking about how, I think at one point they said like, oh, he could hit it from 60 yards, or he hit a 60 yarder in warmups. And then they show him like warming up after he missed that 58 yarder.
Yeah.
It was just like perfect in terms of the way that it worked out.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's funny with these kinds of kicks when it's like, to me, when it's almost a little less amazing when someone makes a 60-yarder, because I would almost think that if I was a kicker, I would rather have a 60-yard attempt to win a game than a 40-yard attempt, because there's so much pressure to make the 40-yarder, whereas there's none to make the 60-yarder. So you can just, you know, go for it and not really have to overthink it.
No one expects you to make that, yeah.
Right. It's totally unexpected that you would make that 60-yarder, whereas a 40-yarder, they're expecting you to be a chip shot. And obviously sometimes I would be interested to see what the accuracy rate for game-winning kicks or end-of-half kicks are that are over 55 yards versus, you know, 45 yards. That was just a thought. But the game itself, something that I know it's preseason and all, but the game itself, the only reason that he had all those kicks was the offense really isn't doing shit right now. Are you concerned at all about the offense, you know, going out there and, you know, not scoring any touchdowns?
No. I mean, I would say, like, if you're going to measure the, like, concern level, it would be, like, somewhere in the mild range. Like, you know, it's slightly disconcerting that they've been kind of sloppy. Russell Wilson's been a little bit inaccurate. The offensive line has been, you know, they've struggled. And so on one level, you're like, okay, hopefully they can get this figured out before the regular season starts. Cause in the past couple of years, they haven't really had that, you know, sluggishness in the preseason. They've been more kind of like kicking everyone's asses. But I think, you know, when you take all the variables together, it's really not worrisome to me. I think, you know, they're still kind of tweaking the offensive line, trying to figure out who the starting five are. They're not playing Marshawn Lynch, which obviously has a big, you know, influence on what they do on offense. They're not Russell Wilson's still kind of, I guess, getting on the same page with Jimmy Graham. I think there's still that chemistry, you know, that they have to figure out in terms of, like, timing and, you know, I guess obviously because he's thrown over Jimmy Graham's head a few times, and in the end zone they kind of got on a different page in terms of what they were doing in that corner shot towards the end zone. So I think there's just things that they kind of work out, and I think that Pete Carroll's even talked about that in practice. So in terms of the run game, I think, you know, it's again, it's a work in progress. The way the Seahawks play, it's always like the runs in the beginning of the game, 2 and 3 yards. And then by the fourth quarter, they're ripping off 6, 7, 8 yarders because they're just wearing people down. Whereas in the preseason, it's like they're playing like a half to max 3 quarters, you know, where with the starters. So it's just way different than the regular season. It's harder to see quote Seahawks football in that setting, I think, because just the, you know, that doesn't really accentuate their identity, which is ball control, slow down the game, like, you know, everything we've seen for the last couple of years. So
yeah,
long story short, you know, obviously there's a little bit of concern for specific things, but the fact they haven't scored a touchdown or any, you know, whatever the stats that you want to quote, those don't really bother me, because overall, I've liked a lot of the things I've seen from a lot of the players. But I think at the end of the day, they do need to start like kind of putting it together. And the Rams are going to be a really tough test first week. So hopefully yeah. they're in a good state of mind by that time.
You know, when you say long story short, you're not supposed to say the long story. You're just supposed to. another factor, I mean, obviously that was exciting, but probably even more exciting than Steven Hauschka's kick was Tyler Lockett. And part of me wishes that they'd kept some of this stuff secret. It's going to change the whole dynamic, I think, of how teams kick to the Seahawks this year, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's something that we've talked about, the hidden yards of the return game. You know, the Seahawks last year, no one was scared of their return game at all, you know. No. And now this year, you could potentially see guys kicking away from Lockett, kicking the ball out of bounds, which generally speaking means you get a little bit better field position. You get guys, you know, hanging or kicking it higher and shorter, in other words, you know, because they're afraid of his return ability and they don't want to outkick their coverage, essentially. And so it's going to make a big difference. I could see that, you know, I'm definitely going to look at the field position yards this year, the average starting position for the Seahawks as compared to last year. I think that's one thing to really look for this year, because I think that Lockett's going to have a big impact on that. And I think that in itself is a force multiplier. I think it has the ability to change the whole complexion of your offense when, you know, you don't have to go quite as far every time you get the ball. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And I think that's, you know, that's why they have 3 picks to get him.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that we don't really talk about a lot is that they had Leon Washington, they had Golden Tate, and then the biggest difference last year, even though they almost won the Super Bowl, they didn't have anything going in terms of returns. So that was obviously why they traded 3 picks to get this guy Lockett. They really thought that he was going to be a special returner, and you know, here we are. He certainly appears 2 touchdowns in 3 games, 1 on kickoff and 1 on a punt. So that's going to be one of the most exciting things to be looking forward this season. And also, it seems like, you know, there's a chance that Lockett could have a significant impact on offense as well. I don't think that he's definitely, you know, it's harder to gauge that sort of thing in the preseason because you're not getting as many snaps and they're right. trying to get other guys in there. But do you have any sort of different feelings about Lockett as a receiver than you did, say, 3 weeks ago?
No, I mean, if anything, it's just more confidence. I think he really looks like he belongs. You know how sometimes guys get out there and they kind of look lost yeah. or intimidated or just, you know, a little bit nervous or whatever. He doesn't give off that effect at all. Like, he looks like he's a veteran to me. And so, yeah, I think he's going to be really good. I think he's probably going to be more – he's going to have a bigger effect on offense than a lot of people even think this year. I think he's going to be kind of – and pairing him with Doug Baldwin, and both of those guys can really run routes really well, kind of shake their defender really well. That's going to pay dividends for Russell Wilson because, you know, we've always kind of complained about the last couple of years how people can't get open. I don't think he's going to have that problem anymore. I think he's going to have mm-hmm. open guys this year. I'm really optimistic about Lockett. You kind of want to temper your expectations and not overstate it, but I'm really excited about him. I think he could be really good.
I mean, if you really laid out a best case scenario, you could say that in the middle of the season, all of a sudden the Seahawks weapons would be Jimmy Graham, Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, Paul Richardson, and then Jermaine Kearse wouldn't have to be until the 5th or 6th option, you know, all things going perfectly, which never really happens. But, and you know, we haven't even played with Marshawn Lynch save for a couple plays. So
right.
there is some optimism there.
Chris Matthews could factor in as well.
Yeah, I don't know yet, you know, if he had been more active during this training camp and preseason and been healthy and everything, I was excited to find out what he does have, you know, and then it sort of just has, for me, puttered out only because he hasn't been there. What are the expectations, do you think, for Matthews in the beginning of the season?
Well, I think you said it well. I think, you know, going into the start of the preseason, people kind of expected, like, he could potentially make a jump and be, like, their de facto number one. Like, uh-huh. you know, he's not going to be, like, a Dez Bryant or anything like that. No one's saying that. But on the Seahawks, you know, being able to be on the outside, be a, you know, a matchup kind of guy. If you get, you know, it's like you'll hear Curtis Crabtree. We have a conversation with him. He talked about it. It's like he's the kind of guy, like if you get him lined up against like a 5'10", 5'11", cornerback, like attack that. You know, the Seahawks haven't had one of those since really Mike Williams, you know, back in the day. So I think, you know, I'm not thinking he's going to catch a lot of balls, but I think what he can bring is just that matchup nightmare, you know, thing for the Seahawks where Russell Wilson trusts him and throws it up for him. And, you know, he comes down with some big catches. I think that's kind of what Jermaine Curse is. He's not a reliable, consistent guy. He's like a big play guy. I think Chris Matthews could be like that as well. But just kind of in a different style. So I think looking forward to that.
Yeah, he doesn't really have the physical he doesn't match up physically with Devery Henderson, but that's sort of what would remind me of that the Devery Henderson in New Orleans, you know, you didn't rely on him for consistent production, but if you needed a big play, you could go to him.
Right.
And looking over as well at that San Diego win, was there anything else that stood out to you that surprised you in a major way that you hadn't seen up until the third game that once you were watching it, like you had a different opinion, either positively, negatively about a unit or a player?
I think the biggest one, like the biggest revelation or whatever you want to call it coming out of the San Diego game was hopefully not an irrational confidence in Gary Gilliam. I think he looked great. You know, he's going up against some pretty good pass rushers on the other side there. And so I think it was a good test for him. Obviously he did well in Houston as well. And so it was good to see, Kansas City. So it was good to see him kind of, you know, reprise that. He did well. The Seahawks liked what they saw from him. He played the whole game. But if you watch him, you know, line up and get into his pass set, he stays balanced. His feet stay shoulder width apart. He's light on his feet. He re-anchors if he gets kind of like off balance. He does all the little things that you really look for in a tackle, especially in pass rush. I'd like to see more from him in the run game. And that will come, but obviously the Seahawks haven't really done a whole lot in the run game quite yet. But the big thing was the pass protection, because you just don't want to get Russell Wilson killed out there. So I was really encouraged with how he played. I think he has potential to be, you know, a huge surprise this year for, you know, I don't know how surprising it is now for, because people have been talking about it a little bit, but
yeah,
I think he's going to go out and if he can stay healthy, he's going to be a really good right tackle.
Yeah, it is interesting, like, how that stuff works out because, I mean, Gary Gilliam, he was not a small school guy. He played tackle at Penn State. He played some tight end. You know, he just doesn't get drafted. And a year later, he's the starting right tackle, and he looks pretty good for a really good team. It's just funny how that stuff kind of works out. And then, yeah, I guess, you know, the moral of the story is, you know, whether you're sitting here right now and you're a first-round pick or undrafted rookie, you know, you don't know who's going to – step up. Look at Drew Nowak. Suddenly he's the starting center. Right. There's some huge surprises here, whereas Justin Britt failed at his position, you know, and has to go somewhere else. And we got certain situations too with Thomas Rawls and Rod Smith, other undrafted guys. We talked to Curtis and he mentioned, you know, not any huge surprises in terms of cuts. Is there anyone that we're now like sort of expecting to make the roster that a month ago you would have never imagined in your wildest dreams was going to be there?
I don't know if I would word it that strongly, but I definitely didn't expect Deion Bailey to be this good. I kind of thought he was like a fringe roster guy at the best. And now he's looking kind of like, you know, a solid, you know, potentially starting safety, you know, depending on what happens with Cam Chancellor, but at worst, he's going to be a solid backup. He's going to be kind of like that Jerron Johnson style kind of guy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the big surprise for me, honestly. I think I was expecting it to be Deshaun Shedd, you know, maybe Stephen Terrell. But I really liked what I've seen from Deion Bailey. I think he's going to be a guy that sticks with the team for a while and plays that really key role that they need in terms of backing up Cam Chancellor. So I would say him. And then, you know, I think trying to look through the roster, other kind of like really big surprises – I think that would be the main one. Yeah, that would definitely be the main one to me. I think Ronald Martin's been interesting, but he's a rookie, so that doesn't really count.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting about Bailey. or not interesting, but just funny on his Wikipedia page when they talk about his college career. And also, you know, this was the Pac-12 defensive freshman of the year. Wow. So there was obviously talent there at USC, but it's just funny to me that the last sentence is, after the season, at the recommendation of his agent, Joey SSF Ingram, he announced that he would forgo his senior season and enter the draft, which to me is funny because it's like, hey, I did this because my agent, you know, made me. He told me to do this. I feel like Deion Bailey put that part in there. But because, yeah, he goes into the draft thinking he's going to be hot shit, maybe, and doesn't get drafted. And now, you know, here he is going into his second season and looking like if they have to start him, or if Cam Chancellor doesn't show up, then maybe they won't be as big of a liability as we had previously thought.
Yeah, and I think there's a, you know, we talk about like speed and explosion spark a lot. And I think there's a lot to that. I really like that way of kind of narrowing down like things in that sense. But I think he's a good outlier for the whole idea that you can kind of get blinded by the numbers in terms of the like the 4.4, for instance, like a 4.4 40. Like, you want your defensive backs to have 4.5 40 at the least. He ran like a 4.6, and I remember even thinking early on in the year watching him play college football, thinking like, oh, this guy looks really good. And I mentioned him to Derek, I mentioned him to Davis. I said, you know, keep an eye on Deion Bailey. And then he ran like a 4.6 or 4.7 or something like that. And I was like, oh, never mind. No. And so, and I think a lot of teams did that, honestly. And that's why he went undrafted. He was, like you said, he was the freshman defensive player, the Pac-12 or whatever. And he played linebacker and safety for them, which makes a ton of sense for the Seahawks because, you know, obviously he's playing in the USC system, which was established by Pete Carroll there. And then, you know, he played both linebacker and safety. So he's definitely got that linebacker mentality where he's like a hard ass hitter, just balls to the wall. He reminds me of Bobby Wagner almost a little bit in the how hard he hits, and he just kind of flies around.
Yeah.
So that's big. He's obviously undersized for a linebacker, but he's got the linebacker's mentality, which is what the Seahawks want from their safety. Obviously, with Cam Chancellor, he's an intimidator. So, So basically, the Bailey thing is definitely an interesting development. It's not something I expected. So,
yeah. Well, we didn't really get into the Raider game very much with Crabtree. So, just let's talk a little bit about some. We're going to see a lot of familiar faces. There's something to watch for. Seahawks fans. One thing that I really want to look at, and, you know, the guy's having a great preseason, and, you know, I know that when he was drafted, Rob Staton was all about how legit he is as a wide receiver, is Amari Cooper, the fourth overall pick.
Yeah.
I like what the Raiders, and I like what Reggie McKenzie has done in the last 2 years or so. You know, they found Derek Carr, and they got Kiko Alonso, the defensive rookie of the year, and then Cooper looks to be a good pick. Just overall general thoughts about the Raiders. Are they heading in the right direction?
I think you meant Khalil Mack, but yeah.
What did I say?
Kiko Alonso.
You know, guys, can we just yeah.
No, Khalil but Mack. To your point, I definitely agree. There's some interesting things happening in Oakland. I think it's funny because early on, like, they killed Reggie McKenzie there. You know, yeah, some of the moves that he made, but I've actually liked some of the stuff they've done.
More also recently. Coming from that John Schneider Packers.
Exactly. Training. Yeah, and they do a lot of the same stuff. It's funny because they, you know, maybe we like what they do because it's similar to what the Seahawks do in the sense of, you know, they do a lot of volume drafting. And they tend to go for the same guys that we have on our list, you know. So, but yeah, I think watching Amari Cooper play is pretty exciting. I'm kind of glad he's in the AFC at this point because he looks like he's going to be really good. I think Derek Carr has a lot of potential. If you watched him play against the Cardinals, he did not have a good game, but there's flashes there where he's just like a fearless thrower. You know, they asked him to throw the ball a lot last year. He threw the ball, I think, 599 times, which was, I want to say, third most of any quarterback in the NFL. As a rookie, yeah, on a team that was probably coming from behind all the time, you know, he's having these tough throws into the teeth of the defense. So,
yeah, and I can't really name. I mean, I'm looking at the roster now from this year, but even still looking at last year's roster, I couldn't even really tell you if I was under duress what who their receivers and tight ends were. It's not like I know Michael Rivera, because he had a good game against the Seahawks. But other than that, yeah, Derek Carr, he didn't move the ball very much, but they didn't really have anything. Right. The Raiders do invest heavily in their offensive line. They signed Rodney Hudson, the top center free agent out of Kansas City. And they also, their addition of Donald Penn last year looked like a huge win for them. But there are going to be some familiar guys on the receiver side. Michael Crabtree goes from the 49ers to the Raiders. And yeah, and Chris Durham is actually trying to get a job there with the Raiders as well. Yep. And then, of course, Super Bowl MVP Malcolm Smith is the defense.
He made a pretty nice play the other week, last week too, in fact.
Did he?
Yeah, he I'm trying to picture exactly what he did, but I remember thinking, wow, that was a hell of a play. And then I realized it was Smith. I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Benson Mayoa is one of their defensive ends.
Yep, that's true.
And not a Seahawk, but a Pete Carroll guy, Taylor Mays. You know, a lot of guys said that they expected – the Carroll and the Seahawks to draft Taylor Mays instead of Earl Thomas. So luckily that didn't happen.
He's probably going to get some action too, because he's third string at this point, I think.
Yeah, you probably will see a lot of him.
Needs to play much in the preseason at this point.
No, I don't know if he needs to play at all at this point. I mean, he is still playing well, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the greatest athletes. I mean, if you consider the fact that Charles Woodson is – playing in the NFL right now, and also consider the fact that what I associate with him with is Michigan, right, which is like he played at Michigan the same time Ryan Leaf was playing at Washington State.
Like my memories of Charles Woodson were like when we were little kids. It's just funny. Like he's still playing in the league, and he's had some really, really good years, not too far, he's not too far off of his really good years either. So
there's a chance that I was literally in elementary school, like fifth grade, when he went to Michigan. I mean, that's pretty insane. And I think he was one of their better players. Not that they had a lot, but I do think he was one of their better players last season. So,
yeah,
that's something pretty phenomenal to see happen. Anything else that you're looking for in tomorrow's games in terms of the Seahawks? I know that Curtis Crabtree, the double C, we talked a little bit about that, but what are you looking for specifically?
Well, I think this is something that we've talked about a little bit over the last couple of months, and the Seahawks, the one hole in their defense, every defense is going to have a hole. There's no defense in the NFL that covers everything.
Yeah.
And one of the main things the Seahawks give up are these little dinky, underneath passes to running backs and kind of like these short little screens and things like that. That is like that's how teams are going to attack the Seahawks this year. They're not going to try and throw it deep over Earl Thomas's head, because it just doesn't happen. So, that's the one thing that I think, the Chargers did a really good job of doing that, kind of attacking the underneath stuff. Phillip Rivers is really great at that. I think that you could probably see the Raiders do something very similar to that this year, or to this week. And so look for guys like Roy Hilloo Jr. I'm not sure if he's in fact playing, but he's a really good receiving running back. And then obviously Marcel Reese out of backfield as a fullback. I think Michael Rivera too, he's kind of like, he's a H-back style tight end. So I think that's going to be something that they're going to try and do. And so there's going to be a lot of coverage opportunities for the linebackers this week and safeties. So I think that's going to be something that's, I'm going to be looking closely at that.
Yeah. I think that I lost my thought. I forgot what I was going to say, but yeah, I don't know. Oh yeah, that's right. Do you think RJ Archer is going to play the whole game?
Oh God. Yeah, he could. No, I bet you Wilson will play a quarter at least.
I don't know. You could definitely be right. I'm just saying, like, at a certain point in a quarterback's career, he never plays the fourth preseason game. I feel like, because at that point you're like, look, I hope that you figured it all out by now. We can't have you out there. And if you fucking hurt your knee in this game, I'm going to fucking have my ass on the line.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly how much Russell Wilson will play, but you might be right. He could play a quarter.
That's the one kind of majorly disappointing thing about Tavares Jackson getting hurt, preseason as it's meant. You know, no offense to RJ Archer, but it's meant that we've had to watch him play a lot, whereas I think that kind of just affects everything. You know, he's done a decent job, and I'm not saying
that. Had a slightly better statistical game than Russell Wilson did on Saturday. Yeah. They had almost identical numbers.
He's been a lot better than I thought he would be, so I'll put it that way. But I don't think he's as good as Tavares Jackson, so I think that affects a lot of the evaluation in terms of, like, receivers and things like that. And so it's been a little bit frustrating having to watch him play so much. But at the same time, he might have earned himself a job somewhere else if someone wants a backup or a third-string guy to come on in and you know, run their scout team or whatever. So he you know, he's done a good job. Early on in training camp, oh boy, he looked terrible. So you know, I remember people saying it on Twitter and stuff, like, holy crap, he looks awful. But he definitely improved.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's pretty insane to me. Like, as far as stories go, RJ Archer has no business being here.
Right.
He went to William & Mary. He wasn't, like, good at William & Mary statistically, you know. And this was – he graduated, like, in 2008 or something.
Yeah, he's not, like, a rookie.
Yeah, he's older than Russell Wilson. He's, like, 28 or 29 years old, and here he is, like
– He was in the Arena League for a long time.
Yeah.
A long time, but he was, like, an Arena League star, so he's kind of got that gunslinger style to him.
We should start an Arena League blog.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. There's definitely a lot more scoring in that. I think he, like, in like 11 games or something, had like 92 touchdowns.
Jesus. Yeah, and you know, our friend of the show, Douglas McNeil III, he caught 18 touchdowns.
Oh yeah, that was great. Yeah.
In a game for, or not in a game, he could have in a season for Portland. So let's go ahead and cut over to this interview with Curtis Crabtree. And then you, what I want the listener to do is listen to it. Real in the Field Goals. Our guest today is Curtis Crabtree from Sports Radio KGR, Pro Football Talk. Curtis, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. How's it going?
It's good. Thanks for coming on the show. Let's get right into it. With I think the biggest news so far is it still lingers after, you know, weeks and not knowing if it was going to end closer to the season, and now it looks like it definitely is going to get right up to the season. Cam Chancellor, what do you know? What do you hear? What do you expect as far as his holdout goes?
Well, once it got past the first, I don't know, 2 weeks or so, and it became pretty apparent that both sides were dug in on this, there was absolutely nothing except for the start of the regular season that would force any resolution on this matter. It just clearly was not going to be the case. So the absolute soonest I expected something to happen would be probably next Monday, which would be the first time the team practices after their final preseason game tomorrow night against the Raiders. I assume that would be the first time I thought there'd be any chance that Chancellor would show up and rejoin the team. Now, just how committed to this position he is, I'm not sure. I have not heard anything from Cam's camp myself. I've certainly seen the same things reported that you guys have, that he fully intends on sitting out some of the season to try to force the issue. But of course, like, you know, we've talked about before, what else are they going to say? Yeah, you know, we're probably going to show up right before the season starts, but, you know, just in case, we're going to keep sitting out for this. No, I mean, if they're going to have any leverage in that, they have to continue to act like they're not going to be here to start the season to force the issue. So I don't think anything's changed. I don't see the Seahawks doing anything more than potentially guaranteeing money he's already supposed to make, because if they redo his contract, that's just going to open up a door that they're not going to be able to close. So until he comes off that stance, I really don't see anything changing.
Do you think that there's a drop dead date in terms of him missing the first game? Like, if he comes back 2 practices before or 3 days before, is that enough time for him to get ready and play, or are we already looking at a probability that he'll miss a game?
I mean, if he's not there for the Wednesday practice for game week, I don't see any chance that he's able to play. Just because, I mean, you're not in football shape at that point. To expect him to go out there and play 65, 70 snaps on defense, theoretically, in the first game of the year on 2 days of practice is just not a realistic ask of anybody. So, ultimately, I think that would be the date where he's not going to be able to play if he's not there for the Wednesday practice next week.
Do you think that this preseason so far in the camp, do you think that with the play of the defense or Deion Bailey, do you think Cam has lost any leverage, or do you think it really doesn't matter? And, you know, he's still as valuable as he was before. Or do you think the team has seen something where they'd feel comfortable in a situation where they had to go a couple games without him?
Honestly, I don't think Cam's ability and his status or whatever changed the matter at all. Ultimately, when you look at the contract that he signed, on an average annual new money basis, he makes $7 million a year, which puts him second in the league in strong safeties and 10th in the top 10 in the league in total safeties overall. By that measure, the ones that the agents and players themselves use when new contracts are signed to rank themselves against other players, he is not underpaid. Now, if you look at his contract this season and the fact that it says $4.5 million is the money he's supposed to make, yeah, I get the understanding of why he thinks he's a little bit underpaid in that situation. But ultimately, the contract is what they signed. And if they redo something for Chancellor here, look, he's been effectively sitting on his couch. I'm saying that metaphorically. He's not sitting on his couch. Meanwhile, Michael Bennett, who's also angry about his contract, is actually here practicing. How do you think it's going to go over if Chancellor gets a new deal while he's sitting at home, while Bennett's actually been busting his butt for a month in practice, going to hit people every day, and he's still not going to have anything new to his contract? That's not going to sit very well. So it's, you know, ultimately, whether Cam's valuable to them or not, I don't think changes the discussion all that much. I think it is what it is at this point.
If he does end up missing a game or two, is the guy in line to take his spot? Is that Deion Bailey in your eyes?
I would think so. I think he fits that role as good as anybody they currently have on the roster. Now, there's no Cam Chancellor replacement. I mean,
right.
You know, that's something they're going to have to deal with and figure out for sure. But ultimately, if Chancellor's not on the field in St. Louis, they have to put somebody there. So he's probably the first one up. I mean, Stephen Terrell's clearly a free safety for him. Ronald Martin's pushed Bailey well, but it seems like Bailey's ahead of him on that curve. The one area where he'd be in trouble more often than not is if he has to end up being like a force player on run game stuff on the edge of the defense. You know, maybe that forces Seattle to try to play some more too deep and to try to give it a little bit of a different look and try to take advantage of Bailey's strength a little bit more as well every now and again. Because I think, you know, ultimately he's not anywhere near the size of Cam Chancellor. So trying to take on a tackle or something or a fullback lead blocking, that sort of thing, it would be a more difficult ask for Bailey. But he's done okay in that role so far, and the rest of the defense will just kind of have to cover it up just as if, you know, Chancellor was missing the game for injury.
And there's reports as well today about Cam Chancellor's situation holding up any deal with Fred Jackson. What do you know about the Fred Jackson situation, and should we not expect him to get signed until after the season has started?
I actually don't know much about the Fred Jackson situation other than the fact that he's visited and he obviously took a physical with him and all that. I've been in co-hosting with Puckett the last couple of days and not been around the team, so it's a little detached from that. But ultimately, I think looking at that situation, it makes sense to me for them to wait on this one. Because as a veteran, if he's on the roster for week one, his entire salary for the season would become guaranteed at that point. And ultimately, I'm not sure if they want to do that as cash-strapped as they kind of are right now, cap salary-wise. And I think that makes sense for them to kind of wait it out. Ultimately, maybe that with Turbin probably going to miss a few games due to the high ankle sprain that he has, ultimately, maybe that forces them to keep a fifth running back in Thomas Rawls or something like that to go with Lynch, Michael, and Rawls for the first week and then consider bringing Jackson in after that. I think that would make the most sense of any scenario I can envision at this point.
The Seahawks play this Thursday, play tomorrow, and then they end up having to cut down to 53 players on Saturday. One of the surprise cuts that I thought from this first round was Lemieux Jean-Pierre. I didn't really think he was going to get cut, especially in the first round of cuts. Do you have anybody in mind that might be a surprise cut once Saturday rolls around?
Well, define surprise cut. I guess is the way I would say it. Like
mildly surprising.
Fringe starter type guy getting cut, I don't think you're going to see any of that. There's a couple that I could theoretically point to. Like, you know, if they were really feeling like they wanted to get some salary cap relief and were really happy with Kevin Smith and Taysom Williams and B.J. Daniels as potential replacements, could they potentially move on from Jermaine Kearse and save the $2.1, $2.2 million of his contract? Where Yeah, sure. Theoretically. I don't think that's likely by any stretch of the imagination. I think for the most part, the roster is going to look like you expect it to look. There's not really any, you know, outside of like, you know, maybe they decide to keep a Terrell Adams over a Mike Morton.
Yeah.
Okay. So be it. You know, I don't think there's any, I don't think there's any really stunning revelations that are going to come out.
What about the, out of the rookie class, which of those rookies do you think, aren't going to make it? Is someone like Terry Poole or Mark Kolinsky in any danger of, not making the team?
I think Terry Poole is just definitely on the bubble. He hasn't shown a whole lot in practices. He's been running with the third team unit pretty much all the way throughout camp. The only time he's kind of bumped up was when there's been a couple little injury issues that have kind of come along. So I don't think there's a whole lot there. That being said, with Jesse Davis hurt, he's the fourth tackle on their roster right now. And certainly they're a little bit thin there. Alvin Bailey has certainly not played to any level that makes you all that encouraged here this preseason. So, you know, I'm sure that factors into it. I think, you know, we just did on the air today kind of a rundown of the 53-man roster, and I had them keeping Glowinski and Spicoli. I thought ultimately that would make sense on a lot of levels. So in that scenario, you'd have Kayvon Milton and Terry Poole being cut at that stage. Maybe he's a practice squad candidate, that sort of thing. But there's still a game to go and a little bit more time to show something. We'll see if there's any change after tomorrow night.
Had a couple of people ask me over the last couple of days if I'm concerned about Russell Wilson's accuracy. He missed Doug Baldwin a couple of games ago, threw behind him on a third down play, and then on this last game he overthrew Jimmy Graham a few times. Do you see that kind of as just early season get the rust off kind of thing, or is there a bigger picture worry here?
Well, I think it's a little of both. I mean, if the offensive line has been as skittish as it has been the first 3 weeks of the preseason, then yeah, you know what, you're going to be a little bit gun shy, worried about where the pressure's coming from and all that. And I think the biggest indication of that was the overthrow down the seam to Graham,
yeah,
where Wilson still was flared out with his feet pointing to the left, towards the left side. He comes back and throws a pass up the seam that clearly with his feet not set, he just did not have control of it, and it airmailed on him a little bit. The one at the goal line just seemed to be a miscommunication where Graham wanted it back shoulder when Russell was thinking throw it to the corner. And then the one to Kurse in the end zone wasn't great either. That's one he should make both of the time. But until he actually knows the names of the five players and lining up in front of him,
yeah,
on a daily basis, I'm going to hold off judgment on any real criticisms of Russell Wilson's accuracy at this point.
Well, speaking of that, Double C, do you think that we got the five guys? Is there going to be an upset if Gilliam isn't the right tackle, Nowak isn't the center, and Justin Britt isn't the left guard?
Yeah, that's what it's going to be, definitely. So, ultimately, I mean, they've been together now for 2.5 weeks, playing that way. Obviously, Okung missed the game, but that was just precautionary standpoint. He's not, you know, there's Alvin Bailey's not taking his job. So that's going to be the five guys starting the season for sure. And, you know, there's going to be some growing pains there. You know, you've got questions about each one of them. You know, Novak's just getting used to playing center, and he's going to have to deal with Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers.
Oof.
Good luck with that kid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, but those are going to be the five guys who'll start the offensive lineup.
Do you think that it's genuine then when Tom Cable or Pete Carroll say that this is a good offensive line or one of the best that they've had in Seattle so far?
Well, last year he said that he thought that J.R. Sweezy and J.F. Carpenter would be the two best guards in the league, too. So, ultimately, when all is said and done, I mean, you have to have confidence in the guys you have. That doesn't mean that they aren't going to check the waiver wire next Sunday either to see who's out there and available, and if they might be able to get better in some of their depth positions as well.
Frank Clark, he's been one of the main, you know, storylines of his training camp and preseason. He's played well when he's gotten in there. He pretty much dominated the first game. Then he showed up at times in the last couple of games. Another guy that is kind of, I guess, been overshadowed a little bit by that is Cassius Marsh. What have you seen from him in first on, obviously, on defense and then in special teams?
Yeah, I think he's a, you know, prototypical Leo guy for them, to where he's, you know, really, really quick, pretty good with his hands. Still learning, still coming along a little bit. But he's showed up several times this preseason to me, you know, on special teams, as you mentioned, particularly in the San Diego game here last week, in addition to chasing the passer and all that. So I think, you know, ultimately he can certainly provide some spark for them on a rotational basis and be a good option to turn to, as will Frank Clark. Clark looks terrific so far. I've said this before, it's tough to tell in practices when you're standing on the sideline and trying to peer through a secondary guy standing on the sideline to see what's going on with line play and all that. But when you get into the games, you can see a whole heck of a lot more, and Frank Clark looks really good in those situations. So it's a good indication that he's going to be able to do some good things for him this year.
Do you think that the situation at running back, you know, I know we talked about Jackson coming in because of Robert Turbin's high ankle sprain, but what have you seen or what have you liked or not liked about Kristen Michaels preseason and training camp so far?
Kristen Michaels just does absolutely nothing for me. his game just does not do anything for what I would like to see from a third running back. Now, if you want to make the argument that he's a number one and you're going to give him 25 carries a game, you know, so forth, maybe I get it that you take some of the good with the bad there and all that sort of thing. But as a third running back on a roster, what are you looking for? You're looking for a guy that contributes on special teams, be solid when he gets in the game, can especially in pass protection, be able to block somebody. And that's areas that Michael still struggles with. I mean, yes, when he's able to get the ball in the open field, he's a pretty incredible athlete to watch. So is Percy Harvin. And Harvin couldn't get the ball in space last year either. So, honestly, he doesn't do a whole lot for me personally. The team still seems to be intrigued by the potential of him. At this stage, with Turbin injured, I would be surprised if he doesn't make the roster. But and it's not like Rawls or Rod Smith, despite the fact that they've been solid, have done anything to really kind of seize up and take the role from him either. But ultimately, you know, to me, he's going to be ultimately unrealized potential because there's so many areas that he struggles with. And it seems like, in a way, he just doesn't quite get all the nuances of what's supposed to happen for Ryan.
You said that you put together a mock 53-man roster. How many receivers did you have on that group, and what were the final bubble guys that ended up making it in your version?
Yeah, we did it on the air today. I think we kept six receivers. With ultimately, I think I kept Kevin Smith over BJ Daniels and Casey Williams. Ultimately, because the way they had the rotations last week, Kevin Smith was up, I think, as both a returner and a receiver earlier than Daniels was. He's looked good in camp as well. Ultimately, I thought Daniels had, you know, been ahead of him for a while, but now I think it's pretty much a dead heat. It might be something that tomorrow night kind of determines one way or the other which guy makes the roster. So I ultimately kept five because of Turbin's injury more so than anything else. Two quarterbacks, three tight ends, nine linemen, five DNs, 40 tackles, six linebackers, six corners, and four safeties, I believe, and not counting Chancellor, assuming he's still on the reserve list at that point when they cut down the roster to 53.
So if you say that Kristen Michael doesn't do anything for you, which, you know, is understandable given what we've seen in 2+ years, are there any young players, guys that maybe we're not looking at as closely that do something for you?
I think you know all the guys at this stage who have shown up a little bit. I mean, it's like the guys like Ronald Martin and Mohamed Cisse and Ty Smith, I think, has done some nice things. You know, T.Y. McGill has consistently shown up in games as well. Guys like that. Golinski's had good moments, for sure. I don't think there's any massive surprises coming out of the blue at this stage. I mean, they've been practicing for 5 weeks. We've seen three games. The guys who are showing up are guys you've noticed by this stage, and I don't think there's going to be anybody that comes out of the woodwork all of a sudden to jump up and snag a roster spot that we aren't kind of already kind of feeling are right there.
What do you think, just overall, the impact that Jimmy Graham is going to have on the team? Like, what is the biggest thing that we're going to see from him this year?
Well, ultimately, I think that he's going to be able to free up the rest of the offense the way they hoped Percy Harvin would be able to where they split him out wide. Are they going to throw a corner? Or are they going to throw a safety on him? And just how big is that player going to be? I mean, it's going to be a 5'11 corner trying to cover a 6'7 tight end. Yeah, that's not going to work. And, you know, when you have a guy like Chris Matthews, too, you now have two size options that you can theoretically trust and throw the ball to. So where, you know, not every secondary is going to have two cornerbacks that are 6'3 or 6'4 that can try to match up with those type of body types. So if Jimmy Graham is, say, drawing the Brandon Browner coverage in the Super Bowl, now all of a sudden Chris Matthews is lined up against Logan Ryan and Kyle Arrington every time he steps up to the line of scrimmage, and you've got a matchup win there. So that should help, the fact that they spread Graham out. If it pulls a linebacker out to go cover him instead, well, that opens up the box for Marshawn Lynch to run a little bit more. If the offensive line is pulled up, it should just open things up a whole lot more for the offense if they can protect Russell Wilson and get the blocking needs up front.
Well said. And sticking with tight end, do you have a favorite in terms of who the third tight end will be? I think obviously Luke Wilson's going to be the second tight end with Jimmy Graham. Is there anyone ahead in the tight end race at the third spot?
I think Cooper Helfitt's probably been a little bit more consistent so far. I think Anthony McCoy would be a little bit better fit in some regards because he's more of a blocking option than Helfitt's been. And considering the fact that they're probably only going to keep the one fullback and Derek Coleman, could really be a benefit for them, given that Graham and Luke Wilson are both receiving tight ends first. But ultimately, I think Helfitt's just been a little bit more consistent at this stage and probably has the leg up there at this point in training camp.
You know, with Jimmy Graham and speaking back on Percy Harvin, what do you think were the lessons that they learned in the Percy Harvin situation? Because it seemed like the addition of Harvin was almost infallible. It was foolproof. Like, all you have to do is give him the ball and that's it. But then their pressure that they may have felt to give him the ball and to put him in situations and design an offense for him actually ended up backfiring. So what do you think are the lessons where even a guy that seems as foolproof, at least in the passing game, you know, blocking notwithstanding, what do you think are the lessons they learned that they're not going to do this time so that they're successful on offense, not just so that Jimmy Graham is successful?
One, that no player is worth that much capital into, no matter how talented he is, because I think that's hurt them significantly. It probably cost them Golden Tate being able to re-sign him a year ago, and you know, may have some still existing Graham expectations on why their cap is as tight as it is at the moment. And then also, you have to find a guy that fits what you do, not try to fit what a player does. You know, with Percy Harvin, he's not the most proficient receiver. He's very good when you get the ball in his hands, but that can be a challenge at times. They tried to do it through fly sweeps and bubble screens and putting him in the backfield, and you know, he can't run a standard dig route or you know, curls as well as other receivers do. So he's just not proficient in that area of the game. He's basically a track athlete that tries to catch footballs. And so ultimately, he just didn't fit in that regard. So when it comes down to it, Jimmy Graham's a better fit because he can fit in what their passing offense asks to do. So I think that's the biggest thing as well, in addition to the financial aspect of it.
One of the most surprising players to me this season or this preseason has been T.Y. McGill. I think he's kind of shown up and really made a, you know, kind of a run for the roster. Do you see him making the roster? And what kind of things have you seen from him on in the first three games?
Yeah, I do have him making the roster right now. I have him as the fourth defensive tackle. Ultimately, he, you know, there's not really all that much that's impressive about him. He's kind of small and stocky, but then he just keeps showing up and making plays. So, you know, that kind of makes you turn your head a little bit. I think he's probably in a battle with Julius Wormsley for that last spot, at least on the initial cutdowns. Not to say that they can't hit the waiver wire and find a D tackle out there that they feel is better fit and replace him the day after, that sort of thing. But I think right now he seems to show up a little bit more consistently than you know, Wormsley or Jesse Williams. I don't think Jesse Williams is going to make the roster personally. But so I think McGill probably has the leg up in that battle.
What about Danny wrote recently about the cornerback kick step routine and that Kerry Williams, even if he's struggling now, it's all about process, that he has to learn it and maybe midseason he'll have it down and be a much better player than he's been in the last couple of years. But due to the play of Therald Simon and Ty Smith, how short do you think that leash is? Or do you think that the contract is going to cement him there for at least a year?
Well, I mean, he's going to be on the roster. He's not going anywhere.
Right.
Roster. There's no question about that. Whether, you know, how much he plays and all that sort of thing, I think he's going to probably start the season there. But ultimately, if he's not getting the job done, they'll give somebody else a shot to do it. But I'm also not going to crown Thorold Simon and put him in because he made two plays in a preseason game either. You know, he had a very solid game last year in Philadelphia, which I think kind of shows the talent he could have. Then ultimately he had ankle, knee, and shoulder injuries that he was trying to play with through the playoffs. And, you know, I think that showed pretty heavily, especially in the Super Bowl when he got matched up on Julian Edelman, just how hurt he was. When it comes down to it here, I think Simon could push him if Williams struggles. That being said, Williams' struggle could come when he hasn't had Earl Thomas or Cam Chancellor next to him too. So he'll probably look a little better by comparison if those guys are out there patrolling the middle of the field.
What about the nickelback position? I think right now I've kind of got Will Blackman penciled in there, but I think it's probably a close battle with Marcus Burley. Do you have a favorite for that spot?
I think probably Will Blackman. He's been the one up with the ones more often when he's been healthy. I mean, he pretty much has been all throughout camp. If he was healthy, he was running with the ones at nickel. And his contract is a minimum salary benefit for veterans. So he doesn't cost much by any stretch. There's no money to be saved like with Antoine Winfield a couple of years ago or anything like that. So I think it makes a lot of sense for them to keep Blackman there, a guy who could play outside for him as well. I know when Blackman was hurt, they had Burley run with the ones because Sherman was out for those games as well, and Burley struggled a little bit there as well. So I would probably lean towards Blackman in that role more than anything else, and I have Ty Smith making the roster probably as his primary backup, at least until Jeremy Lane can, if he even does get healthy and comes off PFP.
There is a surfeit of linebacker depth out of Brock Coyle, Mike Morgan, KPL, and Eric Pinkins. Do you see all four of those guys making the team?
I have them keeping six linebackers, so I don't have them keeping Pinkins. He'd be a guy they'd probably try to get to the practice squad. I would think him or Tyrell Adam, but I think he's played pretty well at times. But I think the six linebackers are pretty well set. And with as much talent as they have in the secondary and as few roster spots as they have to work with, I think there's other spots on the roster that would probably lean to get that spot more so than anything else.
And just generally speaking in the NFC West, who do you think are, you know, obviously I would say the Seahawks are probably the favorite again this year to win the West. Do you have a favorite among the Rams, Niners, and Cardinals in terms of who do you think is kind of the real deal and who's gonna regress this year?
Well, I think Arizona's going to be right there again. I mean, if they can keep Carson Palmer healthy, we saw that they could play at a pretty high level a year ago. Some really good players on that team.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, you know, St. Louis is, you know, people have criticized them for the fact that they just can't get over the hump. Well, they also haven't had a starting quarterback play a game for them in 3 years. So, you know, that kind of matters.
Yeah.
So Nick Foles, you know, assuming he can get through tomorrow night's games without tweaking something or whatever, he'll start the opener for them and give them an actual starting quarterback that's won some games in the NFL and not an Austin Davis or Kellen Clemens and type of player to go with here to start the season. That'll help them immensely as well. And their defense has some serious talent too, especially in the front four, front seven areas. So I would probably rank it as Seattle, Arizona, St. Louis, and San Francisco, a very, very distant fourth.
And, you know, you've said that there probably won't be any surprises, real big surprises, when the 53-man is finally finalized Friday and Saturday. So with this game against the Oakland Raiders on Thursday, is there really anything to watch for? What would you be watching for mostly in terms of the players that are out there? Who has the most on the line?
Well, yeah, I think there's still roster spots on the line. I just don't think there's any surprising guys that would get cut where you go, whoa, they cut that guy? I just don't think that's out there.
Right.
You know, Rod Smith and Thomas Rawls are going to have a battle for that potentially another running back spot. Anthony McCoy and Cooper Helfitt at tight end. Kayvon Milton, Christian Sicoli, Terry Poole for offensive line spot. Then you've got DeMarcus Dobbs and David King for maybe a DN spot. T.Y. McGillen, Julius Wormsley at defensive tackle, Ken Pinkins and Terrell Adams force their way on the back end of the roster. And then particularly at cornerback, there should be a ton of stuff to watch, especially with Mohamed Tite, seeing what he can do in this game as well. I mean, they liked him when he was playing at practice early on, got hurt the preseason opener. And ultimately, because of the time missed due to injury, I don't know if they have a roster spot for him. As I kept it today, I kept it with Sherman, Kerry Williams, Thorold Simon, Will Blackman, Deshaun Shedd, and Ty Smith. And that's six corners right there. even with Cam out, I kept Terrell, Bailey, and Ronald Martin at safety. So then you're talking about Cisse and Burley being among those let go. And it's not that they don't like those guys to some extent. They just got too many good players for not enough roster spots. So particularly in the secondary, there's going to be a good several battles to watch.
Well, we want to thank Curtis for joining us. Where can we follow you online?
On my Twitter account, at Curtis_Crabtree. I write about the team on our station website, sportsradiokgr.com, our Seahawks page, and then obviously at profootballtalk.com too.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to look for Curtis's notes. He always has great game recaps and practice notes during the week. I definitely read his stuff all the time. He knows what he's looking at. So make sure you guys follow him. And thanks again, Curtis, for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. On Twitter and listen to whenever he's on KJR and such, and I'll read those articles that he posts online. And that wraps it up for this week in Real in the Field Goals. Danny, are we going to get together after tomorrow's game and do our first post game?
Yeah, we should. Let's do it.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this before the game on Thursday, you'll also have another download coming into your iTunes soon after the game ends against the Oakland Raiders, and you'll get our final thoughts. Maybe Danny will have his final word on his 53-man roster in some way, because there is not going to be much time between the end of the game to when they actually make these cuts, is there?
No, they're going to have to – I mean, that's like why they have the game on Thursday, because everything's got to get done by Saturday.
Yeah.
So I imagine the evaluations will start immediately. So it's going to be kind of a crazy weekend.
Indeed, indeed. So, yeah, it's pretty nuts to think that by Saturday we will know who the 53-man roster is, even though they won't be surprises to us anymore. I mean, there's definitely huge surprises coming through in terms of Drew Nowak and Deion Bailey, you know, that are guys that are going to make this team. I assume Bailey will make the team, but it should be a good one. Most of the guys getting cut, you know, it'll be guys that still have a red name on Wikipedia, meaning they don't have their own Wikipedia page, such as Nate Iles. I don't think he's gonna make the team.
He's right? Not on anymore, actually.
Oh yeah, this whole Wikipedia page is, I like Wikipedia for team rosters because it's easy, just easy, manageable,
right?
And, but they don't even have Ty Smith on the roster, so it's a little bit screwed up.
It is unacceptable.
Someone go, if you're listening to this somewhere, go and change that. We don't say it enough on the show. I know we say it on the post when we post it up on Field Goals, but want to thank the creator of the theme song again. It's pretty damn good.
I honestly find myself like humming it to myself.
Real in the Field Goals. It is it's very good. And his name is?
David Fagerholm.
David Fagerholm. Thank you so much for the theme song. And also, 3,000 NFL Mock Draft. We had our debut on Monday. We're going to get that on iTunes very soon, hopefully by the next episode coming up this coming Monday. And then Deep Balls will be out Wednesdays or Thursdays. So look out for that coming out next week. Deep Balls, where Danny Kelly and Jackson Bevins get together and make their picks of the week. So there'll be, are you ready to give your picks for week one?
No,
of course
not right now.
Of course not. We haven't looked at the week one schedule.
I got to evaluate all the, you know, preseason week four stuff.
Are you ready to make a pick? Seahawks, Rams.
Oh, I'll be picking the Seahawks.
It's going to be interesting. At some point, you guys are going to have to pick against the Seahawks.
Do we?
I don't know. Maybe you'll pick them to win every game.
Yeah, I suppose they probably won't win every single game.
You know, it was shocking to me because we have such short memories. And, you know, shit happens and you can't retain everything that happened. But what was shocking to me when I was writing the article about the defensive line being possibly better than the Legion of Boom was just like not even close to less than a year ago, 9 months ago, the Seahawks were three games back of the Cardinals with like five games left or six games left to go.
Yeah, they were 6-4, right?
6-4 versus 9-1. 6-4, and they went to the Super Bowl. 6-4 is not, it's not terrible. You know, you're in the playoff race, but that was pretty.
Well, they won out after that, yeah.
Yeah, then they had to. They went 6-0 and went 12-4. They had good finishes. So, you know, if the Seahawks do lose a couple early games, don't get too discouraged.
Oh, yeah, that'll never happen. People won't freak out.
Yeah, there won't be any freakouts. We should go back
to – People definitely won't panic at all.
We should go back to that Week 10 loss that they had that dropped them to 6-4 against the Kansas City Chiefs and just read some of the comments of whatever people were saying at the time.
That would actually be pretty fun. We actually, you know, people talk about that on our – we have a SB Nation email thread for them. Uh-huh. And people are always like, it's really fun to, like, bring up, like, posts from last year at the same time, like, you know, a year ago. Yeah. I think that's – we should definitely think about doing that.
Yeah, we should. And and remember, you should call the Ballard Agency or go to BallardAgency.com. They sponsor our show and tell them that Field Goal sent you. Again, that number is 425-454-3510. That worked pretty well. That
was really, really good.
425-454-3510. I'm going to definitely be doing that from now on.
Good, good.
Yeah, so thanks for listening. And remember, there will be another new episode. It's going to be a quick hit, instant reaction show that comes after the games, and that'll be on Thursday night after the Seahawks play their final preseason game against the Raiders. Thank you.